KBOO Portland.
Cable Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. Right now, during the last week of our spring membership drive, your support can go even further. Contribute today at bit.ly/KBOO, and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $20,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Maximize the impact of your support for KBOO right now and help us reach our $60,000 goal by May 25th. Thanks so much.
Ready to leave a legacy? KBOO Community Radio invites you to a planned giving workshop with me, Tammy Caress, founder of Caress Law. Join us as we explore charitable and tax-saving techniques through your estate plan, empowering you to secure the future of independent media while leaving a legacy. Save the date for May 30th, 5:30 p.m. at the KBOO station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon. Let's shape the future together.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's board of directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
Welcome to the Talking Earth for May on KBOO Portland. I'm Dan Raphael. We're nearing the end of our spring pledge drive because KBOO is commercial-free, community-sponsored and driven, free-range, organic radio, and we need your financial support to keep going. You can make a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly draw. You can text KBOO to KBOO. You text KBOO. 244321. I don't do much texting. The new online donation link is bit.ly/KBOO. We've been having trouble with our website, and hopefully some of the money we raise will go to that. You could also bring it right to the station, mail it to the station. Either way would go to 20 Southeast 8th. And enough of the pitch, and now let's get some poesy. I have three fine local poets for you today, Jennifer Perrine, Flavia Roca, and Laura Winter. And let's just jump right in with JP. Jennifer Perrine is the author of five books of poetry, including A Beautiful Outlaw, forthcoming in 2025, again, and The Body is No Machine. Their latest poems and essays appear in 5 Minutes, Nimrod, Poetry Northwest, Orion Magazine, Essential Queer Voices of U.S. Poetry, etc. Jennifer co-hosts the Inside Queer Writers Read series, teaches writing, and works as the Equity and Racial Justice Program Manager with the Regional Parks and Nature Department. You can learn more about JP at www.jenniferperrine.org.
I'm going to read a few poems from my new book, Beautiful Outlaw, which is coming out from Kelsey Street Press in early 2025. And the book takes its title, Beautiful Outlaw, from the name of a particular poetic technique in which each stanza of a poem excludes one letter of the alphabet and includes all of the other letters in the alphabet, so that when taken together, each excluded letter spells out the title of the poem. So, for instance, this first poem that I'm going to read is called Guns. So in the first stanza, there's no G, then no U in the second, and then no N, and then no S in the final stanza. So if you want to, you can listen for those sounds, those letters, as they disappear and then reappear throughout the poem. Guns. Chekhov said, if one is placed on a wall in the first act, it must be fired by the end of the play. Dickinson stored hers loaded and ready in the corner. My family kept them locked away saved the walls for earnest cross-stitch, the corners for discarded toys. Still, I knew they existed by their thunder in the local woods, by the venison stocked in the freezer for winter. I was never asked to join when the boys shot squirrels, was a lover even then, the kind of kid who, before I left for school, offered a kiss to all my kin, each family pet, even the taxidermied deer head on exhibit in the living room. There were no trophies on the walls of the home where I stayed years later with my partner's friends, who reserved their spare room for weapons. When they threw a party, I played tag in the front yard with everyone's kids to keep away from the boozy target practice happening in back. We stalked and hid, jostled and chased each other in the twilight. I let myself be trapped again and again. My partner was in the service, spent 18 months in Iraq, and came back with a sense it's not so bad to set aside a firearm for the day you might require it. I refused the rifle he would have bought, edgy already at the blade that tumbled from his pocket as we lazed together. For ages, every 4th of July, I watched him prowl the house, his recoil each time fireworks cracked through the sky. Time heals, or so they say. Last year he slept through the whole explosive revelry. This year we stopped roadside to admire the display. For hours after, the barrage left its echo, a high scream that radiated from my ears. To get over my fear, he says, I should try the range, to get a feel for the kick, to imagine the metal in my grip can be more than a tool of rage. I don't need to hold one to know I'd want more than the lie of protection. I'd want the power to kill, to die. I have yet to touch one, but I have practiced being quick on the draw, aiming for the heart, firing one round after the next, not to injure, but to tear a body apart. I have enough in me of both outlaw on the run and white hat bringing order to the frontier, to know the home front and the combat zone are one, that in the final act, we make war here. So there are a number of these beautiful outlaw poems in the book, but I'm also interested in using lots of other different formal techniques in the poems in this particular collection. And one of the forms that I kept returning to was using acrostics and telestics. So I know lots of people maybe experimented with these when they were in elementary school, because acrostics are such a seemingly simple form that they're often given to children as experiments. So in these poems, I'm using acrostics, which are, if you read down the left-hand side of the page, it will spell out a word or a phrase, and then telestics, which are sort of the right-hand side of the page version of that. So in these poems, I'm taking songs from my youth that in some way reference either Asian identity or American identity or both, and using the title and lyrics from those songs as a kind of frame for the poem. So if you read down the left hand or right hand side of the page, you get a song title, a song lyric, and then the title also comes from one of these songs. So the particular poem that I'm going to read as an example of this is called A Little Flesh, A Little History. It takes that phrase from Murray Head's song One Night in Bangkok, which if you read down the left-hand side of the page, that's what it would spell out. And then down the right-hand side is another lyric from that same song. It reads, "Tea, girls, warm, sweet." A Little Flesh, A Little History. On my first visit with my partner's family, one uncle offers an offhand comment, noting with a wink how many girls he met on business trips to Thailand, every massage ending with a little extra for those who could pay. I can't tell if this nostalgia nags at him or if he's mentioned this purely to put me in my place. I keep forgetting I have a race, but of course I learned early on the street, at the mall, once in the library, I got asked while holding my white father's hand where we met, if I was a mail order honey, a pretty young thing brought back from the war. In those small towns where I grew into a teen, I needed to do nothing to be seen as every man's imported dream, a spray of orchids in my hair, trill of a bamboo flute for them to follow. No matter where I went, the image, the soundtrack played over me as if I were a body in an anatomy text, transparent acetate printed, tinted, each layer a gateway to shape the barest bones into a woman's form, nude or naked, depending on who was doing the looking. All those inquisitors got it wrong. I was never anyone's mistress or bride. If I knelt, if I took the deep bow, kowtow once meant respect. If I knock my head to the ground, perhaps this is reverence or rage. If I was always wise beyond my years, looked grown for my age, keep guessing my price, the cost of a country, a whole continent owned and lost. I'm going to read another poem that uses an acrostic method. This one, instead of just using single letters down the left-hand side of the page, it uses whole words. It's sort of similar to Terence Hayes' form, The Golden Shovel, where if you read the last word of each line, it spells out a phrase or a sentence from another text. In this case, I'm using just the same thing, but down the left-hand side of the page. And the text that I'm borrowing from is Buddhist teacher Larry Yang's Four Directions of Forgiveness Practice. So if you read down the left-hand side of the page, it reads, "May you forgive me, and if you cannot do so in this moment, may you be able to forgive me in the future." Except, of course, for Mother's Day. May holds no particular significance. When I think of you, it is always winter. I am tracing figures in the frost. Forgive the irises their showy displays. They can't help themselves. They want to steer me away from my sackcloth and ashes, have convinced me at last to start dancing again. And when I play certain songs, I am not reminded of you exactly, but if I hum each note, I am pierced by the sting of snow across my skin. You are always driving. I am forever pressing my face to the ice-bitten glass. I cannot see the stars, but I am trying so hard. Do I tell you again that I am well enough alone? I have made a life so you can go easier into death. Your boyfriend said you stayed in your body long enough for me to be by your side. I wish I could believe this were true. Let me show you who I am in this moment, waiting for the invisible webs to accumulate in windows, in eaves, so they may catch dandelion seeds. Let them twist in the wind. You were never one for keeping house. I blame you less and less each day. Pray may you be happy, may you be free. Only for the slimmest second do I resent how you were able to leave your children behind. I know what it is to make a life and then run from it. If I sound angry, forgive me. My tongue has been practicing for 40 years and still gives me grief. If I cannot speak the words yet, loss or love, they live in my body nevertheless, because I am made from you. The impulse to flee has always been here too. Even in this future, I am still looking over your cold shoulder, cold comfort this spring day brings. And this is another poem that borrows, sort of a companion piece to that last poem. It borrows another phrase from that same Four Directions of Forgiveness practice. So in the last one, if you read down the left-hand side, it says, may you forgive me. And if you cannot do so in this moment, may you be able to forgive me in the future. In this poem, if you read down the right-hand side of the page, it says, may I forgive you. And if I cannot do so in this moment, may I be able to forgive you in the future. No object can float without some part of it being below the surface. Dear mother, you send no cards from the afterlife to your two children born in May. I cannot be the only one to notice this neglect of etiquette. I did not call on your birthday or any other day for years. Forgive my quarters slipped into fountains instead of payphones, dial tones I severed, afraid you would not answer. I've kept the message you composed after your aneurysm and two poems you wrote. Years I have studied them for what you meant. I know better. If there is a meaning in a text, the reader must be willing to make it. I struggle to make each day new. When the alarm goes off, I cannot bring myself to believe I will meet in the mirror a face worth greeting. I always do, haul myself awake. 4 years ago, I plunged into a lake so cold I shook for hours after. My partner had to ask if I was trying to do myself in. I only wanted to go for a swim. This is how it was between us. What might have been a moment of welcome bliss always had an edge of the dangerous. Some may say you were doing your best. I know you were. And yet, still I invite the question, who I would be if you had not left. No matter how many rivers I wade through, I'm never able to come clean, to untether my anger, let it float easy as cottonwood seeds, to let these catkins open so June appears wild with snow. What can't the wind forgive? All the things it's expected to carry. If I were another person, I might think you were giving me a sign when a breeze slices the curtains, the sun stumbles in. I do not believe you've started speaking to me after all this time. If the light gets in, it's not proof you're with me. It's just clouds moving on to meet their future. Thank you.
And thank you, Jennifer. Next up, moving right along, I have Flavia Roca, who is the author of 4 books of poems published in her home country, Brazil. And here comes Bad Portuguese. The titles are Exosfera, Um País, and Cortos, as well as a children's book, O Jardim de Erica. For 13 years, she was the editor-in-chief of the literary magazine Rabatopalax. She has been living mostly in Portland for the past 15 years, though visiting Brazil often. Here's Flavia.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation. Great to see you again after so many years. I'm going to start reading from a book called Um País. This or would be translated as a country. I write primarily in Portuguese, and then I translate my own work to be able to get them introduced here in the U.S. but I'm originally from Brazil. I was born in São Paulo. And so this is from a series titled To Our Poets that is inside this book Um País that was published in Brazil by Confraria do Vento, in a publisher in 2015. So each poem is pretty much in homage to a Brazilian poet that I admire. And so I'll read just a few of them. To Hilda Hilst. The unbearable blue in the blue marble table, aesthetic and lyrical. Nun, dressed in black, hands stretched on the water table in that blue maze, you lower the uninhabited cleavage, reveal a shoulder. From the platform, the madman sees only an undeserving woman on a moving train. We all stand within this woman. Once in a while, I'm gonna just read the original in Portuguese just to give us a sense of the sound. Para Hilda Hilst, o azul insuportável na mesa de mármore azulado, estetizante e lírico. Monja, vestida de negro, as mãos estendidas sobre a mesa das águas no labirinto azul, você desce o decote desabitado, mostra a omoplata. Da plataforma, o louco vê apenas uma mulher desmerecida no trem que passa. Nós todas de pé nessa mulher. To Adélia Prado. This silly, crazy thing waddles and comes, immoral, loose, tall among the grass. To discuss your syntax is to refuse to scale the inexorably grimy fish through the night in the dark sights of a kitchen with no walls. Mixed like the pain that begins to leave. Broken like the keychain circling your finger. Curved like women in radiant days, the sun continually rising. To Carlos Drummond de Andrade. The insect digs, apuro, on the only patch of dirt. Blocked in continuous matter. Its digging is constant and paced. Every 5 minutes for love, every hour for hunger, in shifts in the fog of war, on the verge of another war. It is important that while seeking for truth, someone hands us the dark orchid with luminous eyes, digging ahead. To Orides Fontella. I left some roses here near the end, but they didn't sound real. They seemed human. They behaved like words with their cold curves and hard angles, arrows of sound inside a box. You say flower with raw cruelty. You make me understand why every rose is an ex-rose. I'll read this one in Portuguese. Para Orides Fontella. Coloquei rosas aqui, perto de algum final. Mas não soavam reais, pareciam humanas. Comportavam-se como palavra, naquela frieza de curvas e ângulos contidos. Flechas de som dentro de uma caixa. Você diz flor na crueldade crua. E me faz entender porque toda rosa é ex-rosa. Now I'm going to read some selections from my most recent book, the Exosphere, Exosfera in Portuguese, published in both Brazil and in Portugal in 2021, like November 2021. So this is a narrative in the voice of an astronaut in the future, set about 100 years from now. The astronaut is looking out into space and inward at the same time. You also need to know that this character is reading a botanical catalog in their spare time. This book and my other books are still unpublished in the US, so I hope sometime I can find a home for it. So I'll start reading this Exosphere. From the exosphere I observe, light flickers like Morse code on the fragment of a mirror I hold in my hand. Little punches of light, each punch a little dying star. From here, the Earth is a mass of crumpled by events, wrinkled many layers down, encrusted with towers and sores. I, astronaut, with no other credentials than the human, cast my testimony in printed and rarefied air in the invisible waves of my voice. 2121, a year without definable features. The mirror is what it is, non-linear flatness susceptible to distortion. It doesn't matter how close to the surface, the oceans continue to reflect an intermittent blue like they did before the first catastrophes. Cutting through inorganic space, the human voice sounds ever more real. It germinates in our chest like a native plant. Its leaves grow so fast that they block any signs indicating a return. In this higher state of communion, we love proliferatively. If we focus on the images, their possible associations, we can get a sense of what's been recently lost. Tannin fills the nostrils with synonyms. Elliptic, it closes the gaps by deduction. Proportional, never whole, the smell searches for any trace of memory that will surround itself with adjectives. The ambient temperature is constant. I keep up with personal care. I follow the protocol of trimming nails. I breathe. I notice new strands of white hair growing even faster. I look more and more like my parents. I click on my files, that photo in the virtual zoo with elephant background. The enormous ears of the elephant fanning behind our heads. The children lining up between the adults. The camera capturing our animal eyes. I enlarge the image. I look so much like them. Love, the resonant circle O, Om, voice box mystified in O. Contraction of lips, muscle, tongue, diaphragm. Diorama of the house we build for ourselves on others. Love for. I read this one in Portuguese. Amor. O círculo sonoro, O. Om. Caixa vocal mistificada em O. Contração de lábios, músculo, língua, diafragma. Diorama da casa que construímos para nós nos outros. O amor por. A great part of the journey is waiting. I pick my branch, sequoia. Sequoiadendron giganteum. Category, tree. Origin, North America. Status, extinct. High winds shake the frail twigs, a red obscured, covered in lichen. The monument hides weaknesses in its massive trunk. The thick bark forecasts fires. Underground, the streams get narrower, tangling the roots. Strong winds, the tree fluffs its feather more. It feels the tiny talons of the bird. Plan B, to continue, to redo what has been done, to amend what has been mended, the iridescent originality of soap bubbles. The dream floats within a fixed radius and pops. It draws angles through time, without a beginning or an end. Bursting is not the same as birthing, not the same as dying. Ideals pull in like waves and keep us in a constant state of contemplation. They break against the same salubrious slope, era after era. The tragic spectacles of our impasse in the hectic despair of statistics. The historical, geographical, cultural havoc in the hall of mirrors and its media deflectors. The immediate is the maximum we can exert in the name of a freedom so hollow as plentiful, as free as any kind of freedom. And there are those things that lodge themselves in others. They violate mild natures with their orchidaceous extravagance, vivid yellow, imitating narcissus. Dancing lady, Oncidium aspi. Category, orchid. Origin, America. Status, endangered. In a sunny room, the epiphyte stretch of pseudobulbs clinging to coconut fiber in the stifling habitat of a vase. A slender figure behind glass. Ocelot, dancer, and the pseudo-Atlantic sliver of subtropical blue. For days or nights or hours, I've been unable to find the mirror. It's easy to misplace objects when all around are drawers. Live files of what's more or less useful. The mirror occupies a transitory position in the general scheme of flighty things. Material proof of emotions that self-justify, looking into the pupil for a kindred spirit. In a few days, the returning trip begins. There's nothing to pack, so I stick myself into my straitjacket. Detachment is a precarious exercise that in its purest form borders the supernatural. I step into the white room. The strange feeling of disguising something evident. Diminished, the ego slips on the pill camouflage in white, but it detects its own shadow and gets up, as if nothing had happened. There is a hiatus between what's being projected and what's about to happen. Today the ship is all sound. Disengagement.
Thanks, Flavia. Just got to mention, we are in our springtime pledge drive. KBOO is commercial-free, community-sponsored and driven free-range organic radio. You know, only about 10% of the people who listen to KBOO donate to it. And so maybe you can, you know, help us bring us up to 12 or 15% of our listeners. You can make a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly draw. You can text KBOO to 44321. And our new online donation link is bit.ly bit.ly/KBOO, or you can mail or drop off your donations right at the beautiful station, 20 Southeast 8th. And now the third and final featured reader, Laura Winter. Laura is the author of poetry collections, broadsides, and performance projects. Several of her poems have been translated into multiple languages. Winter's new book, Noble Scratch Roughly Spoken, features visual artist Brad Winter. She performs with musicians nationally and internationally using language as an instrument. Laura encourages everyone to read a poem out loud. And here she doing that.
Hi everyone. Thanks, Dan, for having me back on the show for the Talking Earth series. I greatly appreciate it. And I'm here reading tonight to celebrate the publication, Noble Scratch, Roughly Spoken. It's a book of my poetry and Brad Winter, who I'm married to, his drawings, and we've been married for 41 years, and this is the first time we have ever had our work together between two covers. It's a beautiful, beautiful book, limited edition of 150 copies. Each one is numbered. I hope to be doing some readings around Portland where you'll have an opportunity to purchase them for $15 a piece. I'm also going to get something up on my website, laurawinterpoet.com. So keep an eye out there for information on how to order one. The book, it has 25 of Brad's drawings, 25 of my poems, and actually there's a 26th drawing, which is the beautiful cover that he designed specifically for our book. So Brad's drawings come from a selection of what he calls his rough books, which he has been drawing and making for probably more than 25 years, and he's got 13 to 15 in his group of just line drawings. And most of them are what he calls automatic drawing. So I'm going to read some of the poems from the book, and then we'll see how much time I have left. So here we go. Practicing for the carnival. A giraffe in velvet and feather boas stilts down the street, juggles tree branches along the way. Children stop their play, and the fireman asks, "What are you?" She bends wide and low, reaches for the astonished smallness of his hand. "Whatever you want me to be." One thing that I like about the selection of poems here, Margareta Waterman of Nine Muses Books was the impetus here to get Brad and I to put our work together between two covers. And her interest in our work was she wanted everything not to have been published before. So all of these poems had never appeared before. And so, yeah, thank you, Margareta. Shout out to you. Okay, Where Amita Sits. I enter too tall to stand erect, engulfed in the odor of votives sweetened with seep, indecipherable juvenile feet, prayers for beauty and wealth echo in recesses of the cave. Stroking my golden replicant, I ask only for peace. Catholic obsession. I dream of heaven and hell, ceiling murals, shoes people wear, the virgins, perfect plaster toes, clouds and worms. All rise, amen. Votives flicker. I dream of omelets, stations on the breakfast table. Crackers and wine, a choir of stomachs wait in line. Her hat smells of bacon. I suck blood from a hangnail. This next poem is partially a found poem, I guess. I mean, I was in my bathroom one day and I had the window open. I was taking a shower and I had the window open. And I was listening to two little boys who were in between the houses and they were playing and they were having an amazing conversation about the end of the world. Little boys spend hours strategizing the survival of their species. Paper boats and light wands lose their magic. When bells ring in church steeples, it's time to get serious. What about the end of the world? What happens when the food runs out? The little boy asks. We can take small bites of each other, his small friend answers. You mean eat people flesh? Something he hadn't yet considered. Yes, says the friend who's figured it all out. Cannibalism is okay, as long as you sign a waiver. Yeah, that's a good one. I have a couple of really nice poems from overhearing the children in our neighborhood talk. They have the darndest ideas. Okay, a dream of salvation. Flames crest the wall of rock and sweep away houses on the ridge. Polarized windows deflect the rage, the infernal heat. Watch the world crumble behind steel and glass. Only animals pass freely through a door. Who are the stampeding mobs, waving money, smudged with ash? Yeah, these are a couple of my kind of climate-focused poems. Here's another one. To die trying. To die trying. In persistent dreams of fire. Even as a smallness encircles this world, pull the strings of your sweatpants tighter. Lack of flower memory, lawnmowers and carnivores. Will there be weeds if bees refuse to pollinate? When birds stop singing, will anyone hear? Okay, a bit of a true story here. What happens when you actually drink too many martinis in the desert in a natural thermal pool? Yeah, martini tangled. And you know, there was a whole pickup truck full of cowboys coming down the dusty road towards us. and I didn't have my suit on. My suit was hanging off into the tulies. And I after several martinis in the hot sun, was trying to put my swimsuit on. Martini tangled. The red suit and pimento float off. Well stirred, even bruised, I try to climb the bank. Hornets also miss their holes and drop grasshoppers all around me. There's no map for precision or grace, and the flailing mallow uprooted, mooning my way to land. Okay, I think I'll do one dedicated to the L Line in Chicago. It's called A Train Bottle Throttle Woes. And this is a poem that I like to improvise with, because it's the way that it's written. It allows itself to be performed in a way that mixes everything up and uses the voice almost as an instrument. Train bottle throttle woes. To the breakfast diner under the L line. How do you keep the yolks from breaking? Breaking yolks under the L line, breakfast diner, train bottle throttle yolks, breaking woes, train bottle to the breakfast under the L line, how to keep yolks from throttle woes. Okay. Another one about Mai Tais. Wow, okay. So this, there was a place in San Francisco's Chinatown that every time we were in that city, we would visit. It was called Li Po. And it was a wonderful dive bar that had just beautiful silk lanterns and dust and cobwebs. And the bartender had been there for many years, and he made the best Mai Tais. But he always told us never to drink more than one, because of the special gasoline that he put in it. And so naturally, when you're warned like that, you have to try what happens when you have more than one. Li Po's Mai Tai Blues. A fruit fly slides down the side of the cocktail glass, drowning in the lake of floating light. Another fruit fly lands on an iceberg, unable to find wings melting. The third fruit fly staggers up the stem of the red moon bobbing. And like a lot of you, I like family picnics. And here's one just about family picnics. Eating sand. Eating sand. Jello on the beach. Salmon-colored suits. Splash and play. Seagulls and eagles scavenge for scraps. So many family picnics. Okay, let's see, what else can I read to all of you? Okay. Here's a couple that, have to do with a little bit of grieving. A moon between us. Moonlight seeps through drawn blinds, ignites mites, and dust lamps float around the packing crates. Pieces of us shed the punctuation of history, a rewrite of our story. The closet full of hangers, each wears a husk of you. I pull out your bathrobe, the one with holes, and fold myself into a final embrace. Yes, and you might not know it, or maybe I shouldn't say it, but this poem is actually about a cat that Brad and I really adored. We love our cats, who on the evening, on solstice, was being buried by Brad in our backyard under some flowers. Those moments of solstice. Sun in the palm of our western sky, a piece of you around my neck. Squirrels aerate your grave, unearth walnuts stored for the shortage of day. Today, the longest night, tomorrow, another moment of light. Time to change out those flowers. Okay, and I've got a couple here I'm going to finish up with. Some madness of weather funnels. A coughing old man spits on the barn's windows. An old rooster runs a tornado around his pen. Coo-ca-roo-ca-roo, coo-ca-roo-ca-roo. The hen of bum leg, the hen of milky eye, settled to nest out, pelting laughter of rain, hail, rain. All night trees snap and chant, chill, chill, chill-a-bone, chill-a-bone, chill. Take the fence, funnel, and be gone. Okie dokie, I'm going to do, oh yeah, one, oh, true story again. I shouldn't even say this, but it's true. So, there were a couple years where I would do some sleepwalking, but the most serious sleepwalking I ever did was sleep driving, and I don't even know how I got in the truck and down to the grocery store before I woke up. Yeah, okay, sleepwalker. I don't do this anymore. Sleepwalker. I have to go, go, go. Eyelids flutter, rapid fire. Listen closely. The silent half of the conversation makes sense. The one who dresses me and puts me behind the wheel in the wee hours of morning. Vroom, vroom. I have to go, go, go.
Thanks, Lara. And you can hear Lara reading live from her new book Tuesday, May 28th, 7 p.m. at the 13th Moon Gravity Well, 41st and Holgate, beginning at 7. Also, Matt Schumacher will be reading from his brand new book, Mooncalf Almanac, and me, Dan Raphael, will be reading from my 29-year-old book, The Bones Begin to Sing. And I'm going to read a poem from that book now. Navigating. I am a compass on top of a car, paralyzed in a half-mile-wide street. I've eaten the battery, filled the gas tank with urine, and point the ignition key at every dark cloud, daring lightning. I catch pigeons that fall from exhaustion and worry their bones into beads. With my thoughts, I call bears, call the one bear of molten integrity, feet thicker than tractor tires, claws like the bumper teeth of a 59 Caddy. Surf's up! Rain rises like popcorn from an invisible surface, a flute from the Holiday Inn that surrounds us with snow, and five sets of perfectly musical teeth, a jaw lost in Alabama, a blanket made from 2 weeks of newspaper. I choose just one letter like a focused lens, but each is a potential poison. K, F, E. Wanting to dive through and own a clean, singular madness. Imported from Mexico or Korea? No, made by someone richer than me who drinks directly from the river, body bulging with spare kidneys and pancreas, as a catfish can tap into the lungs of mud, the blood of lost food and fugitive machinery, wanting to trade information for oil. Wanting to take the A train almost to the roundhouse, where tenements conceal their wealth with ersatz street phantoms engraved by laser onto popsicle sticks, thrown into the air and sticking against the half-dissolved bricks old straws are whispering out of, like thunder on roller skates, or chess played with gigantic butter churns whose whirls of rancidity are distraction and reward. How after the seventh level of what-ifs, you wrap yourself in the slats of potato canoes, leather corn, and winged mailboxes, refusing to let the zip code stop changing, humming into flowers made from noses, happy to be on their own, like the spare parts on the back of Mount Rushmore. What all those smooth hills are ostriching, the knobs and nipples ground into paste, gilded for collectors, or snuck in a back pocket of pants that won't fit tomorrow, so are tucked away for a friend, a diet, a garage sale, or when the puppies get born and keep chewing until they know all the words and get jobs as preachers, computer programmers, or carpenters who only use live trees. The deer who betray the relatives of children, the prairie who blossoms pints of Jim Beam. And here's a shorter, newer poem, also by me. Rapture. I wondered why so many empty parking spaces, then looked up and saw the lid of the sky had been removed, thousands of bodies gushing upwards. Most of the homeless were gone. Most of the small business owners were trying to find staff. I paid the meter, as certainly the police were still here. I tried to call home, but a cloud of cell phones enforced silence. Maybe the pawn shop with used guitars and guns is open. We have inherited the earth. Not all of us are meek. Okay, I'll read one more, also from that same book, Many Thing. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. No one moves. A black Camaro spilling fries peels out of the parking lot. The chase begins. A wolf walks into a McDonald's. The 4'10" cashier bolts for the back door. Wolf leaps the counter. In two strides, his jaws tear off her left thigh. A wolf walks into McDonald's. No one says anything, assuming he's a service dog. A wolf walks into McDonald's. The rent-a-cop, having a late lunch, pulls his weapon and tells the wolf to freeze. The wolf jumps the counter, then out the drive-up window, his teeth grabbing the bag from the convertible driver's lap, two quarter-pounders, two large fries. A wolf walks into a McDonald's, steps up to the counter, and sets down a baggie in, which is an order, 20 double cheeseburgers, no buns, no mustard, and a McDonald's gift card. "Your order 319," the cashier says. The wolf goes to wait with the other customers. No one tries to pet him. I envisioned that happening at my closest McDonald's on 82nd and Foster. Great spot. You don't see people there anymore. It's all robots. But this is live radio here on KBOO Portland, and you can become part of the solution. I mean, we need your donations. We need money to pay the few staff members who are paid, mostly to pay the electricity, because, you know, PGE takes a big bite out of us. But it's a community that counts, and there's a lot of people to be thankful for, so I'm thankful to all of you who have donated or will donate soon. I'm thankful to Patrick Bocard, the engineer and sort of head of the show, to Barbara Lamorticella and Walt Curtis, who founded this show. I refer to it as the second longest running poetry program, radio poetry program in the country, and it may actually be the first. I know someone else who might not be, who might be. And again, thanks to all the bookstores carrying poetry books. Thanks to all the people who host readings, who go to meetings.
KBOO, Portland.
You're listening to KBOO, independent radio since 1968. Support our station and fight the status quo by donating to our spring membership drive, now through May 25th. During our last week, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $20,000.